When the American media discusses the Ground Zero mosque debate, it's common to see headlines like this from the L.A. Times. 9/11 families and GOP's Boehner Palin react strongly to Obama support of a Ground Zero mosque. It's common outside the U.S. too, like this from One India. 9/11 families criticize Obama for backing mosque near Ground Zero. More accurate, but harder to find, is this headline from the Asbury Park Press the other day. 9/11 families divided over mosque near World Trade Center. Obviously, in an attack with 3,000 victims, there will be different opinions. In an attack with 3,000 New Yorkers as victims, there may be 6,000 opinions. The fact is that a variety of 9/11 families organizations have developed over the years, all in loving memory of those murdered on the day, but some with competing political agendas. From any side, they're once again having to confront their own values and their own interests and their own memories in their special role in American life. With the Park 51 Cultural Center, as it would be called, still rising as a political issue, we will talk now with members of two different 9/11 family member groups who are politically different on the issue. Colleen Kelly, co-founder of the group September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, and Peter Gadiel, founder of the 9/11 Families for a Secure America Foundation. Colleen and Peter, we appreciate both your time. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we talk about the issue of the day, do you want to take just a minute, each of you, and tell us who you lost on 9/11 and why you got involved in the organizations that you are here today to represent? Colleen, will you start?
Sure. My brother, Bill Kelly Jr., was killed on September 11th. He was in the North Tower attending the breakfast at Windows of the World, the financial breakfast. And he wasn't supposed to be there that day. He was there quite by accident, just a one-day deal. In fact, he worked on Park Avenue. But our family found out late that morning that Bill was attending the conference. So I became involved in an organization called Peaceful Tomorrows within several months after that, just as both an outlet for my grief and also as a way, in some small way, to remember my brother and kind of pursue what I hoped would be in his memory, some positive memories about him.
Colleen, thank you. Peter, how about you?
My son James was 23. He worked at Cantor Fitzgerald on the 103rd floor of the North Tower. I joined with many other 9/11 family members in 2002 in founding 9/11 Families for Secure America because we were concerned about the fact that the terrorists all were easily able to enter the United States and remain here for up to 2 years, hiding among other aliens, legal and illegal, and finance, rehearse, and carry out their attacks virtually under the hiding in plain sight. And we wanted to get together to attempt to lobby our government to prevent other dangerous people like this from getting into this country, and also to attempt to make sure that the real causes, the negligence of our government, the role of the negligence of our government and government officials that played in 9/11 was exposed.
Thank you. Hearing those headlines that I read before, I wonder how you would each describe your group in relation to the larger community of 9/11 families. Do you each claim to speak for more 9/11 families than the other? Do you compete at that level? Peter?
We don't compete. I mean, some years ago, we wrote a letter to the then Senate Majority Leader Frist in support of legislation that would have prevented terrorists from getting driver's licenses, and within about 4 or 5 days, we had 600 family members sign the letter. So, we have a fairly active membership and a fairly large one, but as far as attempting to say we've got more members than you or whatever, no, we don't engage in that kind of thing.
Colleen, same question, and how do you feel when you hear some of those headlines that seem to put 9/11 family members all in one group?
Yeah, I agree with Mr. Gadiel. I don't think any 9/11 family organization would claim to represent all 9/11 families. It's just, you know, that's just impossible. But I think each organization does claim to represent its members, and most organizations do that really, really well.
So in general, what do you each feel the building of this cultural center would mean to your loved one's memory? Or is your loved one's memory even the issue for you at this point? Colleen?
Well, I think, first of all, it's important to recognize the similarities between all the 9/11 groups, and that is that we all lost someone that we loved very dearly on that day. So there's ties that bind us that I like to think go much deeper than the politics or legislative initiatives that kind of divide us in certain ways. But that said, that, you know, the strong ties that we do have that won't be broken, I mean, no one can undo that day. There are various viewpoints about issues that pop up. And I think that family members feel compelled not only to remember their loved one, but that also gets into a little bit of a tricky area, too, in the sense that who can best speak for that loved one? Mm-hmm. Is it the mother? Is it the father? Is it the sister? Is it the brother? I'm not sure how my brother Bill would feel about this mosque. I can only tell you how I would feel about it. And so there's lots of treacherous waters that have to be waded through, I think, to get to the other side on many of these issues.
And so go ahead and tell us how you feel about it or what your group's position is.
Well, personally, I feel, and I believe the vast majority of members in my group feel, that one of the things that was so disturbing about 9/11, one of the many, many things, is that the religion, the Muslims and the religion of Islam was, I believe, vastly distorted on that day, too. And people, those 19 hijackers may have been claiming to speak for an entire religion on that day. And I believe, personally, Muslims that I know and friends of mine who are Muslim were shocked and really horrified that now their religion was being equated with such an evil act. So I believe that the mosque is representing a much, much more moderate voice of Islam. I know Imam Faisal personally. I know his wife, Daisy Khan. They very courageously reached out to 9/11 families in 2002, I believe. And to me, the mosque represents the voice of Islam that we all need to hear.
So, Peter, same questions for you and your group.
I think, to say the least, she's naive. First of all, I do clearly remember the mass demonstrations of joy in the Muslim world when the Trade Center went down and about the attacks. As far as moderate Muslims go, we've seen some pro forma denunciations when pushed by so-called moderate Muslims. But these, as I say, have been pro forma, and we have not seen any mass demonstrations of anger against this violence. The fact is that most of the terrorist acts of the last 40 years have been committed by Muslims. Whether they're extremist or not, there's been little response from the so-called moderate Muslim community to fight this aspect of their religion. As for Ralph, I mean, he's a man who has said that he wants America to be Sharia compliant. He calls America complicit in the 9/11 attacks. He says one thing about funding, that it'll be all U.S. funds when he's in this country, but overseas in England. He has said that he'll accept donations from Muslims in other countries, which means that it's possible he could accept funding from Muslims in Saudi Arabia who helped fund the 9/11 attacks themselves. And this goes far, far beyond this particular thing. I mean, after all, Islam has a history of conquering other religions and other civilizations and then destroying their monuments and placing their own monuments on top. And Peaceful Tomorrows has supported the efforts of violent Gazans against the right of Israel to live in peace. It seems to seek out any group that finds fault with the United States. It talks about they've sent representatives to Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Their website is full of such references, which don't mention in the least the Japanese atrocities of World War II or the millions of deaths. But history for them seems to begin in August of 1945 and talks about the atom bomb and leaves out the fact that millions and millions of people would have been killed had the United States not dropped the bomb. They talk about the Dresden bombing. They sent representatives to support Saddam Hussein before the invasion of Iraq. And one of the most disgraceful things that I can see about the group is it was founded by two people named Phyllis and Orlando Rodriguez. And two days after 9/11, when the rest of us were looking, hoping against hope that we would find our loved ones alive someplace, these two people were issuing political statements saying the government of the United States should not respond in a violent way against the perpetrators of the 9/11 attacks. So I think, and in fact, one of your members, Mr. Salisbury, Wright Salisbury, this year in the Boston Globe said he was radicalized by 9/11. And I think what happens here is that the Peaceful Tomorrows group is an extreme far left-wing fringe of both American political spectrum and of 9/11 families.
Wow. There's a lot there to respond to, Colleen. Take your pick.
Well, I don't quite know where to begin, except I do take offense with attacks on people that I know and love dearly. The Rodriguezes are the mother and father of a young man who was killed, who also, like your son, worked for Cantor Fitzgerald, and they were expressing their American right to ask our government not to respond violently in their son's name. That I don't understand why that would be an issue for you, Mr. Gaddio.
Because the rest
Wright
of us were still looking again for our loved ones. We weren't issuing political statements one way or the other.
As were Phyllis and Orlando. Wright Salisbury is a fellow in his mid to late 70s in Boston who started interfaith groups and does a lot of interfaith work in the state of Massachusetts. Good work. I'm one of the people who did travel to Iraq, as you said. I did not go to Iraq in support of Saddam Hussein. I did just the opposite. I went to speak with Iraqis, ordinary Iraqis like you and me, ordinary Americans who had to live under the atrocities of Mr. Hussein and his regime. And I went to find out about their life there and also to kind of work with them for what was sure to be a war and violence and difficulty that was going to be affecting them in the near future.
To oppose the coming U.S. war effort at the time?
Yes, it was a civilian-to-civilian trip, and I met with many Iraqi civilians. So, if you would like to characterize this as a far-left group, that's certainly your right to do so. I would disagree with that. I think many people in our group would characterize us differently. We are all people who lost loved ones and people that we loved very dearly. And for us, this was the best way to honor the memory of our loved ones.
My guests on WNYC are Colleen Kelly, co-founder of the group September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, and Peter Gaddiel, founder of the 9/11 Families for a Secure America Foundation. Getting back, Colleen, to the question of Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf and what to think of him with respect to the development of this mosque or cultural center, the quote, I think that is not a disputed quote that Peter referred to where Rauf talked about the U.S. as being complicit in a sense in 9/11, complicit meaning owing the Muslim world an America culpa, I think he might have put it, about, acts in the years leading up to 9/11. So how do you interpret the remarks that he refers to?
I do not think that he used the word complicit in his remarks.
It was not in the quotes that I saw.
Yeah, so if someone could correct me on that, I'd be happy to listen to it. I don't know the exact quote, but I do know generally what you're referring to. I think there's a lot of vast opinions, different varying opinions about why 9/11 happened. I think one thing that people can agree on is abject condemnation of what happened on September 11th and people choosing to murder others to express their political views. And I certainly would always condemn any acts of violence like that. There's a process in this country, thank God, for ways for Americans to express their political viewpoints nonviolently and through a legal and political process. We're very, very fortunate in this country to have that process. And I would hope that elsewhere around the world that processes such as that are become more prevalent because hopefully the idea is that less violence will be perpetrated if people have other ways of, to vent their frustrations and political will.
To be specific about one quote, reading from a website that says in a 60 Minutes interview that aired on September 30th of 2001, Raouf said that the 9/11 attacks were part of a larger Islamic, quote, reaction against the U.S. government politically, where the U.S. espouses principles of democracy and human rights, and yet where we ally ourselves with oppressive regimes in many of these countries. Continued, I wouldn't say that the United States deserved what happened, but United States policies were an accessory to the crime that happened. Because we Americans have been accessory to a lot of innocent lives dying in the world, it could be said that, in fact, in the most direct sense, Osama bin Laden is made in the USA.
Mm.
Your reaction?
The name bin Laden brings up lots of feelings in me. I do believe that there's certain pieces of U.S. foreign policy that I would vehemently disagree with. I wouldn't go as far to make the statement as Imam Faisal did, but I think there is a sense of frustration around the world, not just with the United States, but with any country that kind of says one thing and then does something different. I mean, you know, we backed Saddam Hussein in the 1980s. The United States backed Saddam Hussein in the 1980s, and then we go to war with him less than 20 years later. So I think there is a frustration, not just with the U.S., but with anybody. It's if you have to walk the walk and talk the talk.
Peter, here's where the Peter, let me.
Iranians who were really, even at that time, just as vicious as he was and perhaps more dangerous on the world stage. So there was a reason for that. Not that I certainly approve of every foreign policy of the United States. I disagree with many, mm-hmm. many. But the fact is that there seems to be an element that supports virtually anything that opposes the United States and causes and says the United States is at fault for virtually every problem in the world.
But, Peter, on the other hand, those are political statements or statements of political analysis, even. And this is where charges of painting with too broad a brush by people on your side come in. The 9/11 attackers were Muslims acting in the name of Islam. We know that. There are some factions of Muslims who are waging holy war against the United States. We know that. But these Muslims are not those Muslims. They didn't attack the World Trade Center. They're not on a terrorism watch list. They have peacefully run a mosque just a few blocks away. They're part of the neighborhood since the 1980s. They are New Yorkers. Sufis in general tend to be sort of the hippie peaceniks of Islam. There's an op-ed in the Times today which describes this imam's writings as kind of a Muslim Deepak Chopra and reminds us that the great Sufi saints like the poet Rumi hold that all religions are one, that Sufism, in addition, is seen by the jihadis as a threat, as an indigenous resistance movement to their murderous ways, and that the Pakistani Taliban attack Sufis as infidels. So were you aware of any of those distinctions, Peter?
I was aware of that for the most part, not some of the specifics you mentioned. However, we can't ignore the fact that too many moderate mosques around the world have then been infiltrated by radicals and then taken over and become themselves sources of teaching the most violent aspects of Islam. And again, Ralph's suggestion about Sharia law in the United States and his duplicity about fundraising and his refusal to reveal the sources of his funds raise a lot of questions. And the fact is that the Saudis have funded many mosques around the world. And you know, the pattern is such that whatever claims there may be of peace here, there's plenty of good reason to doubt the facts, doubt the claims.
Let me jump in on the question of the funding and the transparency. Here's a clip of the woman who would head the center, Daisy Khan, the wife of Imam Faisal Abdul Raouf. This is from our show on July 15th when she appeared as a guest. And since there is such a demand to investigate where the money is coming from, I asked her, where is the money coming from?
Actually, just like any other campaign, when somebody is running for campaign, you begin a fundraising campaign. We have not begun the capital campaign for this project as of yet. The property was purchased by Soho Properties. Everybody's aware of that. That was, you know, the Sharif Al-Gamal actually presented that at the Landmarks meeting and clarified that position. And so how we raised $100 million is you know, whether we are looking at particular bonds, we are looking at institutions, we are looking at private donors. It's going to be a mix of funding sources that will put this project together. We have not begun the campaign yet. And more importantly, because there is a concern about transparency and scrutiny, we will be working with the Charities Bureau to ensure that what we are doing is correct and that it's in compliance. So we are not planning to hide anything from anyone.
Peter, your reaction to that, is that not sufficient?
That's a nice claim. That's a nice claim if she can be believed. She can say anything she wants, but the pattern that has been established by Muslims around the world is quite different, and many of us are not prepared to take her at her word. I debated somebody who was on the community board, and he said when he was asked by the moderator about the building being open to non-Muslims, he said he made that assumption. He was assuming that to be the case.
But she said that.
He assumes the goodwill of the other side. I'm afraid that assumptions of goodwill in this case are not sufficient.
She was talking about processes of transparency once they start the fundraising campaign.
Well, we'll see. I suppose we'll see, won't we?
Colleen?
Well, I kind of take the opposite viewpoint in the sense that I, until proven differently, I don't have reason to doubt the goodwill of Daisy Khan or of people who are backing this center. I feel strongly that the Justice Department and our system of criminal justice, if there was wrongdoing or there were people who were infiltrating this in some way who had bad intentions or violent intentions, I feel strongly that the criminal justice system is going to let us know and something would happen. I have faith in that system.
This is the same system that allowed 19 Muslim terrorists to come into the country and live here freely for 2 years while they planned, rehearsed, financed, and carried out the attacks. This is the same Justice Department under orders from the president, cannot use the word jihad. All right. So yeah, this is the system that Ms. Kelly really has faith in. I'm sorry, I have a lot less faith in this Justice Department, in this government, than she has. This is a government that has shown itself to be negligent and careless, and directly contributed through that negligence to the deaths of our loved ones. If she suddenly now has a lot of faith in the government, I applaud her for having faith. But
back to one thing that you said, which is that Muslims around the world have shown themselves not to be trustworthy with their statements about where funding is coming from. I think I'm pretty much quoting you right. Can you deny an individual something based on what others have done and paint with that broad a brush?
Absolutely not. But at the same time, I don't have to trust. Okay? I don't have to trust. I don't have to put blind faith in people. And that's what we're being asked for here.
We're almost out of time. We're almost out of time, and obviously the two of you are not going to agree on the content with respect to the mosque. Regardless of your differences, we had Congressman Gerald Nadler on yesterday, who represents the World Trade Center area, and he questioned how much the opinions of 9/11 family members on either side should matter. Listen.
There are tremendous sensitivities here. And I certainly understand the sensitivities of the people who lost loved ones there, and their strong feelings. Having said that, those feelings cannot control the constitutional right of the people to establish a mosque or community center there if they wish. And it is not the role of government or government officials to try to push the imam not to do that. If the imam and the people around him want to change their mind, that's their business.
So just give me a quick reaction, each of you, and then we're going to be out of time, to Congressman Nadler on how 9/11 family members' feelings should not control the constitutional right or the debate beyond what is right. Peter, very briefly on this.
Well, I fully agree. This is a matter for the entire country, not just 9/11 family members. We don't control the debate. We don't control. We should not be able to control the debate. And I agree on that one thing. I would agree with him. As far as the Constitution is also not a suicide pact.
Colleen,
it doesn't require us to allow people who are dangerous to the country to undermine us.
I would also agree with Mr. Nadler. I see this as kind of similar to the legal system in that victims' families are not the ones who choose punishment for a crime or what a sentence might be if a criminal is convicted, although we do get to, in most instances, have a victim's impact statement. So I agree with it in the sense that I think a 9/11 voice is important for every issue, both sides, as many sides as needed or willing, but at the same time, we should not be controlling the process. I think the Constitution has stood up for over 200 years, and we're still new at this. We're under 10 years, so I believe in our Constitution.
Well, we appreciate both of you coming on and coming on together with each other when you hold such profoundly different views and hold them so emotionally. Obviously, the whole country still feels for the loss that you and other 9/11 family members have gone through, and we appreciate you stepping out into the public sphere and having conversations like this. So Colleen Kelly, co-founder of the group September 11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, Peter Gadiel, founder of the 9/11 Families for a Secure America Foundation. Again, thanks to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, what the Google and Verizon deal might mean for the open internet. Stay with us.